A Matter of Spirit is the quarterly publication of the Inner Community Peace and Justice Center. Winter 2012, Issue on Immigration.
The Church's Call for Immigration Reform by Jill Marie Gershutz Bell. Jill Marie Gershutz Bell is a junior fellow at Woodstock Theological Center, where she edited And You Welcomed Me, Migration and Catholic Social Teaching. She is also Senior Legislative Specialist for Catholic Relief Services. Several years ago, a college senior told me that she disagreed with the church's stance on immigration. I encouraged her to continue reading and discerning. A few months later, the young woman emailed to ask what she could do to promote immigration reform. I just found out that Juana is undocumented. I've worked with her for more than a year in my community service work, and I just know that if there were a way for her to be here legally, she would have taken it. Please, tell me what I can do for Juana. This thoughtful student's position on immigration shifted completely as a result of her relationship with one undocumented woman. How many people of good faith have, because of one transformative relationship, sought to confront injustice? In the case of our outdated immigration system, this push for change is based upon a relationship in which the U.S. citizen wants to see his or her friend live in dignity as a full participant in American society, protected from our often draconian enforcement policies. Rather than emphasizing national security and economic cost benefits, Catholic social teaching emphasizes human dignity and the common good. Practicing authentic development, participation, good stewardship, economic justice, subsidiarity, and solidarity as a church will bring us closer to God's kingdom. Given the many competing tensions between the common good and individual needs, between justice and law, what are the just relationships between newcomers and our communities? What do we owe one another, not only to avoid doing harm, but also as co-creators in God's kingdom? What are the implications of this for our government's policies in our own community life? The Church calls upon communities to aspire to conditions in which all people can thrive and become the people God called them to be. John Paul II asserted, in Solicitudo Rei Socialis, that authentic development is well-rounded. On a personal level, authentic development would provide everything one needs to become the person God intended. Catholic social teaching further asserts that people have the right to migrate or not to migrate in search of authentic development. It respects the right of governments to protect borders and calls upon them to protect their people. The concept of authentic development applies to those of us in the developed world as much as those in the developing world. John Paul II noted that solidarity enables us to overcome not only the dehumanizing underdevelopment from which many migrants flee, but also the overdevelopment which tends to reduce the person to an economic unit in an ever more oppressive consumer network. Applying this exhortation to our immigration policies would require a significant rethinking of trade, enforcement, our visa system, and our basic economic structures. U.S. trade policies, especially the North American Free Trade Agreement, have spurred migration to the U.S. because small-scale farmers in Mexico cannot compete with U.S. agribusiness. A trade policy that acknowledges the economy exists for the people, not the other way around, would seek to protect workers at home and abroad. This reality of globalization, combined with the dearth of visas for unskilled workers, compels many migrants seeking work or family unification to risk the dangerous 3-day trek through the Sonora Desert. This abomination would be significantly mitigated by a more generous visa system that more accurately reflects the U.S. economic reality. Before the current recession, as many as 500,000 additional workers annually in the U.S. were gainfully employed but without documentation. The significant contributions of migrants, whether in construction, agriculture, hospitality, or the service industries, are often welcomed by employers and consumers alike. An authentic development for the U.S. would acknowledge the significant contributions of migrants and would foster undocumented migrants' full participation in all other aspects of life, cultural, civil, political, and social. A path to legal work for future workers and a path to legalization for the undocumented would right the relationship between workers and the U.S. Despite all that migrants have contributed, the prevailing public opinion suggests that Americans eschew them. Complaints about migrants using public services not only miss the point that migrants do pay for these services through taxes, but also that good stewardship calls us to be generous with God's gift to our nation. The increasingly vitriolic debate has furthered anti-immigrant policies in dozens of states and increased deportations by the Obama and Bush administrations. Migrants are the face of globalization today. As host communities, we have three options for our relationships with newcomers: xenophobia and exclusion, marginalization and discrimination, or solidarity and integration. The Church played a critical role in the integration of Catholic migrants in past generations and has the opportunity to do so again today. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and more than one dozen other national Catholic agencies have sought, since 2005, to improve U.S. immigration policies through the Justice for Immigrants campaign. Catholic social teaching considers migration from the perspective of God's one human family. But until we as church live as that family in solidarity, our prophetic words will continue to fall on deaf ears. Do we share a vision for a church that facilitates right relationships between newcomers and migrants? In biblical times, hospitality was considered a virtue. Henri Nouwen offered a particularly appropriate perspective of right relationships that emphasizes participation and subsidiarity. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer space where change can take place. To convert hostility to hospitality requires the creation of the friendly, empty space where we can reach out to our fellow human beings and invite them to a new relationship. The paradox, indeed, is that hospitality asks for the creation of an empty space where the guest can find his own soul. Do we strive for this hospitality today? It will only be through personal relationships of solidarity that our policies change. Reverend Shay Auerbach, Society of Jesus, has noted that when he became pastor of a multicultural parish in Raleigh, North Carolina, he began to facilitate ownership by keeping the Spanish version of the text in the pews alongside the English version. At Jesuit High in Portland, Oregon, students offer ESL courses to the physical plant staff and others in their community. This kind of integration assistance also creates community, helps students to give back, and exposes them to migrants' reality. Brooklyn Bishop Nicholas DiMarzio, an outspoken advocate of a more just immigration policy, upholds the Trinity as a model of integration. Reflecting unity and diversity, the Trinity appreciates the unique gifts of all three unique members. Now is the time for us as church to creatively welcome new gifts to our corporate body as we negotiate the 21st century.
Push and Pull of Global Migration by Mary DeLory. Mary DeLory is Catholic Relief Services Strategic Issues Advisor for Latin America and the Caribbean. Today, as in the past, migration flows reflect the signs of the times. Migration is closely linked to economic, social, and political realities that influence the decision and often the necessity for people to migrate. Push. Why do they leave? It is necessary to analyze current economic migration in the context of globalization. Globalization, characterized by interconnected and interdependent economic, technological, and social relations, has created levels of wealth barely imagined in the past. However, the benefits are not equitably distributed within or between countries due to the lack of accepted regulatory or ethical frameworks. Free trade agreements, promoted as a panacea to deliver economic benefits for all, increase employment, and reduce migration, have fallen short, particularly in terms of their impact on the rural poor. The liberalization of trade makes it possible for goods, capital, and entire employment sectors to cross borders. Yet workers cannot legally migrate across borders to areas where jobs have been created or away from where they have been lost. For example, in the period following the approval of the North American Free Trade Agreement, Mexico lost over 2 million agricultural jobs, leading to small farmers migrating to urban areas or across borders. Continued U.S. agricultural subsidies and cuts in support to farmers by the Mexican government complicated the situation. The price of corn was driven below the cost of production, leaving farmers with a crop literally not worth harvesting. Mexican immigration to the U.S. increased by 1.5 million from 2000 to 2005 alone. Pull. Why do they come? Economic migrants come seeking jobs. Many developed countries with aging populations and low or declining birth rates have experienced a substantial decline in young workers entering the workforce. Without considerable adjustments, including immigration, these demographic changes have the potential to reduce economic growth, undermine viability of the Social Security funds, and create significant labor gaps. Despite this economic demand, the public in many receiving countries remains concerned that immigration will negatively impact labor markets, reduce job opportunities, or decrease wages. However, studies consistently demonstrate that immigrants have relatively little negative impact on wages or employment. Migration generally promotes economic dynamism with a positive net economic impact in receiving communities. Responsibility and response. The factors compelling large numbers of people to migrate need to be addressed. Responsibility for addressing root causes rests first with countries of origin and the need to create viable opportunities. However, most countries, particularly those with limited economic or political power, are heavily impacted by international economic and trade policies, use or misuse of natural resources, and geopolitics beyond their control. There is a shared responsibility to promote more equitable development especially in light of the impact of economic and foreign policies on developing countries. National migration policies need to be aligned with reality. They should recognize the economic benefits and necessity of migrants for labor markets of destination countries. Legal migratory channels that more adequately respond to mutual economic, labor, and security needs of countries of origin and destination should be promoted. Restrictive migration policies result in few avenues for legal or safe migration. With little recourse to protection, legal representation, or basic services, the migrant experience can become a litany of abuse and exploitation, including extortion, kidnapping, violence, and even death. Regardless of legal status, migrants, like all persons, possess inherent human rights that should be protected. If migrants are exploited, marginalized, or kept in a second-class status, the rights of all are threatened and our nations diminished. Migration is not only an economic, social, and legal issue, it has a human face and ultimately is a moral issue. We need an approach that both reduces the necessity to migrate and protects those who have little choice but to do so. The long-term goal needs to be equitable development so that migration is a choice, not a necessity.
Postville, Taking a Stand, Touching Hearts, by Mary McCauley, Congregation of the Sisters of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Mary McCauley was working as a pastoral associate at St. Bridget's Parish when immigration officials conducted one of the largest raids in history, arresting 398 immigrants in Postville, Iowa. What happened on May 12, 2008? That was the day that Postville as a town was shattered and its history changed forever. And yet it was on that day, amidst the roar of sirens and the sound of helicopters and the sight of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, agents armed with guns, that the Holy Spirit inspired me to say, "Tell anyone who is afraid or alone to come to the church." By 7 p.m., we had over 400 men, women, and children just pouring into St. Bridget's. The church and hall became their home. They were too afraid to be in their own homes for fear that ICE agents would arrest and deport them. Huge numbers of advocates came to our rescue. It was a day of great sadness for people whose families were separated, but it also called people to speak up for justice. How did the community respond? We offered pastoral presence and support, cleaning the bathroom, preparing three meals a day, and providing medical, legal, and financial assistance. People from 49 of our 50 states donated to pay for food, utilities, and rent for the families. We also interviewed every single person that was willing, so we could have a running record of exactly what happened. In the days that followed, we held prayer rallies and marches. The purpose was to raise awareness, advocate for reform, and at the same time empower them to speak for themselves. Up until that moment, the women who had GPS devices on their ankles kept their slacks pulled down. They were so embarrassed they had been arrested. But when we went to the rally in Waterloo, they rolled their slacks up and carried signs that said, "We are not criminals. We are mothers. We came to work. We came to feed our families." How have you been transformed by Postville? It has certainly given a focus to my retirement that I would never have thought of. I am a real advocate now for immigration reform. All I've been trying to do is put a human face on the issue. There's a constant gnawing within me to take a strong public stance. I get very irritated when I see the lack of movement for immigration reform or so many deportations. So what Postville has done is given me this desire to act. Yet it has also caused me to be very sad because I don't see the change coming. It's at times like that I have to give myself a nudge and get back on track and recognize that this is a significant issue and we have a monumental task. The only way to do it is through small steps and chipping away at it. Where do you see possibilities for reform? The critical need is telling the story, getting the human face out there, trying to touch hearts so that they want to transform a law. Possibly, if they can hear not only the Postville story, but innumerable other stories, hearts will be touched and laws transformed. Luke 17:10 reads, "So with you, when you have done all that you have been told to do, say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have done no more than our duty.'" I think in this whole issue of respect for the person and immigration reform, we are really unworthy servants, doing no more than our duty. It is our duty to call for justice and be a voice for the voiceless and respond to the needs of people who are purely the victims of circumstances of their lives. It's not really a heroic act on our part to move for comprehensive immigration reform. We're doing no more than is already our duty. Most arrested in Postville served 5 months in prison and were deported, the majority to their home village of Rosario, Guatemala. William Toe had borrowed $7,000 for the trip to Postville. He had hoped to pay for his mother's cancer treatment with his earnings, but was arrested on his first day at the plant. After being deported, he is struggling to repay the loan. "It was all for nothing. I just got my family more in debt. You earn just $6 a day here, working from 7 until 4. It's not even enough to pay the interest on my loan." From Guatemala, in the shadow of the raid.
Southern Hospitality, A Model for Every Church, by P. J. Edwards. P. J. Edwards is a former business executive who now focuses his efforts on social justice education and advocacy. He is a plaintiff in the case against implementation of HB 87, Georgia's anti-immigrant bill. It started for me in 2008. Our parish, St. Thomas the Apostle, experienced radical growth, with a dramatic increase in Latino parishioners. By 2007, the parish was 2.5 times larger than in 2000, with 6,000 registered families, 43% Latino, 39% white, 13% African American, and 5% Asian. We had outgrown our capacity and were constantly crowding each other. If we had been a homogeneous group, there still would have been tension. Throw in the different languages, the cultures, and ways of worship, and you've got yourself a concoction for conflict. Externally, our parish is in Cobb County, Georgia, where police and elected officials boast of an anti-immigrant policy and enforcement. The state has devised an effective method of rounding up immigrants by requiring proof of legal status, not simply residency, for driver's licenses. The penalty for driving without a license is now 2 days mandatory detention, during which time officials check immigration status. Local officials turn over record numbers of immigrants to federal immigration officials. With the 2008 presidential election coming up, my wife Amy and I knew that we needed a better understanding of this complex issue. We attended a viewing of a short film, The Invisible Chapel, about one community's response. We were shocked that the atmosphere was less than congenial at the discussion afterwards. Amy decided we needed to take this film back to our parish and use it for dialogue. We collaborated with Catholic diocesan staff to develop an immigration experience that included the film and a presentation. Knowing that one session would not solve all the challenges we faced, we committed to organizing a Travelers Together campaign with education, advocacy, and direct service alongside recent immigrants. Dialogue sessions brought together U.S.-born and immigrant parishioners. Today, you will find the Travelers Together ministry organizing sessions for various religious denominations, nonprofits, and business leaders, planting seeds of acceptance and changing attitudes. In 2009, we organized the Holy Thursday leg of the inaugural Holy Week pilgrimage for immigrants. We would walk 8 miles from the church to Marietta Square, adjacent to the county courts and sheriff's office. Initially, we hoped to get 50 parishioners to make this journey. It is important to understand that this type of advocacy is not common in our area. That day, 525 prayed with their feet. It was empowering for our immigrant parishioners to see the police they fear on a daily basis now protecting them. Our group was not always popular with passers-by. When someone would get too aggressive verbally or with their vehicle, the police handled the situation quickly and with tact. Upon arriving at Marietta Square, U.S.-born parishioners washed the feet of recent immigrants. It was incredibly moving. You could feel the solidarity. At the end, we took the hands of another pilgrim, looked into their eyes, and sang in Spanish, "I love you with the love of Jesus. I see in you the face of God." We did this repeatedly, switching partners. You felt certain God was with us. The event created cohesion in the larger parish community and gave us the trust to overlook cultural and language barriers that often get in the way. The pilgrimage has become an annual event with growing numbers every year. In Georgia, the struggle for immigration reform seems hopeless. I think of the fishes and loaves story, where Jesus tells the confused and anxious disciples to feed the crowd themselves. Ultimately, the disciples do their job with what they have. Jesus handles the miracle of multiplication. How do you bring recent immigrants and the U.S. born together as one community? It starts with a few brave people willing to see things from the perspective of the stranger. From my privileged status, the injustice and suffering was invisible. Once I had friends in marginalized communities, however, I had almost no choice but to learn, love, and advocate.
Detention Explosion by Andrea Black. Andrea Black is the executive director of the Detention Watch Network. a national coalition working to reform the U.S. immigration, detention, and deportation system. Since the late 1990s, the number of people held in immigration detention has exploded. On any given day, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, called ICE, detains over 33,000 immigrants at a cost of $1.7 billion per year. This is more than triple the number of people detained in 1996. Families, lawful permanent residents, survivors of torture, asylum seekers, and other immigrants languish in a detention system so massive that it has led to rampant due process and human rights abuses. The unprecedented surge in detention is largely attributable to legislation signed into law by President Clinton in 1996. Asylum seekers, lawful permanent residents with previous criminal convictions, and certain non-citizens are now subject to mandatory detention. At least 60% of the 363,000 people detained in 2010 were subject to mandatory detention. More than 80% have no legal representation. People held in immigration detention are not serving criminal sentences, but are awaiting decisions of whether they can remain in the U.S. legally. Yet they are held in prisons or local jails. Almost half are detained in private for-profit prisons, which benefit financially at the expense of family unity, human rights, and due process. It is not uncommon for torture survivors, human trafficking victims, and other vulnerable groups to be detained for months or even years, further aggravating isolation, depression, and other problems associated with past trauma. Immigrant families, many with small children, are kept in jail-like conditions, while pregnant and nursing women report problems with accessing proper health care and nutrition. Immigrant advocates frequently receive complaints such as lack of access to necessary medications, shackling, discipline through segregation, tasers and denial of meals, inability to visit with family, and denial of access to religious services. Countless women have reported sexual abuse while in detention. More than 126 immigrants have died in detention since 2003. Many of these deaths were caused by a lack of timely and adequate medical care. Nearly one-fifth have been suicides. Despite its status as the nation's second-largest jailer, ICE operates without independent oversight or enforceable standards. Instead, it relies on internal standards which do not carry the force of law. Compliance varies greatly among the network of 250 federally operated detention centers, local jails, and private for-profit prisons. For-profit contractors are not directly supervised by ICE, resulting in little oversight and accountability. As a result of concerted advocacy, litigation, grassroots organizing, and media attention, ICE acknowledged in 2009 that the detention system is fundamentally broken. The agency promised a range of reforms to move away from its network of jails toward a less punitive model of detention and greater accountability. Almost 2 years later, while there has been some progress, many detained people still suffer human rights violations. The skyrocketing growth of the detention population, spurred by an expansion of local police immigration enforcement, is not only compromising the agency's ability to accomplish its reform agenda, but in fact is hastening the dangerous merger of the criminal justice and immigration enforcement systems. ICE has announced plans to build several new detention centers to house populations that ICE itself considers low risk, populations that ought to be released outright. Private prison contractors with terrible human rights records and deep political ties to policymakers are building these new facilities. We have a responsibility to uphold our core values as Americans: dignity, human rights, and due process of law. It is time to reduce our dependence on detention and begin to create a more humane system consistent with American values and international human rights norms.
The High Costs of Detention by Susan Francois, CSJP. Susan Francois is a Sister of St. Joseph of Peace and editor of A Matter of Spirit. Adriana's immigration detention experience began when she was rear-ended in a traffic accident. Local police responded, discovered that she had a deportation order. Her lawyer had failed to inform her that she had lost her pending immigration case and was going to be deported. Even though she did not have a criminal history, Adriana was immediately taken to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, Washington. That's where Jorge Barone, executive director of the Northwest Immigration Rights Project, NWIRP, met her. We identified that because she had been a victim of severe domestic violence, she may be eligible for one of the protections available, but it would be a difficult case, said Barone. In the meantime, she would need to spend 2 to 3 months in detention away from her 7-year-old daughter, a U.S. citizen. She almost gave up because the prospect of being detained and not knowing was too much. She persevered, however, and after 2.5 months in detention, with the help of NWIRP lawyers, she was reunited with her daughter and granted permission to remain in the country. Detention of people facing deportation proceedings has become the default, says Barone. Reliance on detention increases the likelihood of an incorrect outcome. People are more likely to just give up because they don't see any hope when they are detained. Barone has witnessed a huge expansion in the number of people detained in recent years, many in private for-profit detention centers like the one in Tacoma. This is problematic. One, it dilutes accountability. Second, you get this incentive for these very large corporations to perpetuate the system and spend a significant amount of money to lobby for continuing the expansion of the system. The general public seems largely unaware of our immigration detention system. I will talk to people in Tacoma who say, "I didn't even know there was a detention center here." And here you have the fourth largest immigration detention center in the country, a mile from downtown. Education of the public is key, as is advocacy. You can still have a deportation process, but do we need to keep them detained while cases are pending? Asked Barone. He points to the high costs of detention at a time when drastic cuts are being considered to things like health care and education. It's such a waste of resources, and it has this human cost that is very disturbing. I think we can do better. Take action. Join a local visitation program organized by faith communities across the country to support those facing deportation in detention centers. Visit www.detentionwatchnetwork.org to find a group near you. Write your members of Congress. Share your concerns about spending $1.7 billion per year on immigration detention during our fiscal crisis.
Juntas podemos hacer más. Together we can do more. By Giselle Carcamo, Justice for Women Coordinator. For many, the idea of organizing a Spanish-only conference for marginalized Latinas sounded unattainable. Numerous assumptions had to be demystified in order to make this project fly. The greatest difficulty was not convincing potential sponsors that Latina women needed a space to celebrate their strengths and accomplishments, reinforce community support systems, and fortify their organizing capacity, but that the conference needed to be in Spanish. Many argued that, quote, all Latinos speak English, unquote. Some started to worry about U.S.-born Latinas who don't speak Spanish. Others, commenting that they themselves had tried unsuccessfully to gather Latinas in the past, doubted that participants would actually pre-register and attend the event. The most important piece of information and source of inspiration for us was that potential participants thought it was perfectly timed and highly necessary. Hope and determination led to unprecedented successes. First, the City of Seattle gave us their total support, and the Seattle Center lent us their exhibition hall. Then, the Children's Museum offered to help with childcare, sponsoring 100 children from low-income families and their chaperones to spend the day of the conference at the museum. Presenters donated their time and talents. Latino organizations and media supported the project and helped with promotion. Multiple possibilities started to open up. The greatest accomplishment was that 300 immigrant Latinas from 40 Western Washington cities benefited from the conference. Latinas from all socioeconomic groups, nationalities, and walks of life inspired one another by exchanging insights of inner strength, motivation, and leadership development. Participants emphasized that they needed a safe place to open up and share their experiences with others. Said one attendee, quote, I really liked that at this conference we were in a safe place to share and speak our truth in Spanish. Unquote. The conference strengthened their sense of belonging. Another participant commented, quote, being here makes me feel that I belong. Our sisterhood gives me the courage I need to keep going. Unquote. Healing and liberation happened while recognizing their strengths. Said another, quote, I freed myself through the recognition of my achievements. Unquote. The women regained their potential as leaders and stated that they wanted to join other Latinas to create a more visible movement. Said one, quote, I am here because we need to have more visible leadership in the Latino community. If we do so, my community will be stronger, more responsive, and willing to act upon the problems we face. Unquote. The need to connect with other everyday leaders and regain hope for a better future was fulfilled. At the end of the conference, an empowered Latina said, quote, I reaffirmed my conviction to continue to support my Latino community. Today I discovered that I am not alone. Many women share my dreams. Together we can do more. Change can actually happen.
The harvest is plentiful. Just Farming by Nick Mealy. Nick Mealy is a member of the National Council of Pax Christi USA, who is passionate about nonviolence and justice for immigrants. Most of us hear Jesus' lament about the lack of laborers to harvest the fields as a call to evangelize. But for many of our farmers, Jesus' words are the literal truth. There are not enough workers to bring in their crops. Every year, between 500,000 and 750,000 farm workers transition to other work. In the current climate of uncertainty about immigration justice, fewer are willing to come as undocumented workers. Out of millions of visas issued by the U.S. State Department every year, around 5,000 visas go to unskilled workers, i.e. farm workers. Every farmer who grows labor-intensive crops says the work requires high skill levels, yet the classification of farm work as unskilled and the small number of visas granted each year point to structural injustice that causes human suffering and puts an economic squeeze on growers and workers alike. More than 70% of the food we eat has been touched by undocumented workers on its way from seed to supermarket, according to Cheryl Brodsky of Brodsky Orchards in Prescott, Washington. Our emphasis seems to be only on enforcing the laws rather than on how we are treating human beings, created in the image of God, she notes. For decades, Cheryl and her husband Ralph have treated their workers as human beings, providing a living wage, educational opportunities, and a housing community that includes a church and recreational facilities. Even a brief visit to their farm makes clear their commitment to their workers. Most labor-intensive farms have camps for their workers that range from uninsulated wooden shacks with communal shower and toilet facilities and perhaps one bare light bulb per dwelling to insulated but still bare-bones housing. The Brodsky's workers live in Vista Hermosa, a settlement with substantial houses, mowed lawns, recreational facilities, and a church. Eva Madrigal came with her family to the U.S. as a child and began working at various farms at an early age. Today she is director of Snake River Housing, the entity which manages the Vista Hermosa community. Eva and her husband were both able to complete their GEDs and get additional education with the support of the Brodskys. Four of their five children have completed college. Eva's work managing the housing community involves her in counseling and networking farm workers and their families with needed resources. The Brodskys care for their employees and give as much as they can. More than anything else, it is the spirit and the love with which they give it. Their early formation as Christians, which taught them to respect each human being as a child of God, and a dream of helping poor children, started Ralph and Cheryl Brodsky on their path of servant leadership. When changing conditions resulted in an overnight influx of Latino workers, just as U.S.-born migrants left farm work, the Brodskys decided to find out why these men were traveling so far to work. "We went to Mexico over Christmas in 1983 to find out why they were coming here, and that began our spiritual formation for real," explained Cheryl. "We made numerous trips to Mexico, tried to understand the causes of this exodus, and learned many things, like that the water table in the South Mexico has been depleted, lack of roads to markets, violence and oppression, especially among indigenous people." Somebody had left a copy of Paul VI, 1969 instruction on migrants. The line I remembered was, "The right to work and feed the family precedes the right of a nation to establish borders and control exit and entrance to and from that nation." That line gave us the moral permission. God called us to a mission, and these were the people that God called to help us.
Grassroots Leadership Spotlight by Nick Maley. We need leaders who believe that the earth is holy,
who believe in human rights and who believe equity can be achieved, says Rosalinda Galen, Executive Director of Community to Community Development, C2C. A woman-led grassroots organization based in Whatcom County, Washington. C2C works for a just society and healthy communities. We need to provide potential leaders the space and learning so they can express their beliefs. As a former farm worker and longtime organizer for the United Farm Workers of America, Galen has experienced the justice issues and problems of developing leaders. She has been a leader herself on the complex issues related to farm worker and immigrant justice, sustainability, and empowerment of true grassroots leaders. Galen believes the task for potential leaders is not self-empowerment, but to understand one's place in the big picture and how to move everybody forward. She collaborated with a group of 16 women from the Native American, Latina, and Anglo communities to form C2C in 2003. Together, they continue the work of identifying common goals and actions among people from marginalized communities and those that believe in sustainability with social justice as a way of life. Show me the suffering of the most miserable, so I will know my people's plight. Free me to pray for others, for you are present in every person. Help me to take responsibility for my own life, so that I can be free at last. Grant me courage to serve others, for in service there is true life. Give me honesty and patience, so that I can work with other workers. Bring forth song and celebration, so that the Spirit will be alive among us. Let the Spirit flourish and grow, so we will never tire of the struggle. Let us remember those who have died for justice, for they have given us life. Help us to love even those who hate us, so we can change the world. By Cesar E. Chavez, 1927-1993.
Immigration, Reflect and Engage. This is the fourth issue of A Matter of Spirit, dedicated to the complex topic of immigration. Since our first immigration issue in 1994, hopes for comprehensive reform have risen and waned. How might you, personally and communally, engage the impasse we experience with immigration justice today? Under the topic of the human face of immigration, there is this quote from Mary McCauley, BVM. Quote, "Possibly, if they can hear not only the Postville story, but innumerable other stories, hearts will be touched and laws transformed." Unquote. Ideas to consider. Research your own family's immigration story. Gather friends for a meal and share immigration stories. Who are your immigrant neighbors? Build mutual relationships with immigrants in your parish, workplace, and community. Under the topic of solidarity, there is this quote from Jill Marie Gershutz Bell, quote, "Catholic social teaching considers migration from the perspective of God's one human family. But until we, as a church, live as that family in solidarity, our prophetic words will continue to fall on deaf ears." Unquote. So, ideas to consider. Listen to the stories of Postville and St. Thomas the Apostle. How might your community act in solidarity on behalf of immigrant justice? Consider inviting IPJC or another group to give an immigration workshop to your faith community. Or download the continuum of action, resources, and toolkits from www.ipjc.org/links/immigration.html. Under the heading of advocacy, J.P. Edwards has this quote to ponder. Quote, "Once I had friends in marginalized communities, I had almost no choice but to learn, love, and advocate." Unquote. So an idea to consider is to visit the IPJC Legislative Action Center at www.ipjc.org to write to your members of Congress on behalf of immigration justice. Immigration resources. Books. The title of the first book is And You Welcomed Me, Migration and Catholic Social Teaching, by Donald Kerwin, K-E-R-W-I-N, and Jill Marie Gershutz, G-E-R-S-C-H-U-T-Z, by Lexington Books, 2009. The title of the next book is Living, quote, Illegal, unquote, The Human Face of Unauthorized Immigration, by Marie Friedman Marquette. That's M-A-R-Q-U-A-R-D-T, by New Press, 2011. Films. The first one is titled Abused, The Postville Raid. You may find out about this on the internet, www.abusedthepostvilleraid.com. It is a 97-minute documentary. Another film is called The Other Side of Immigration. You can learn more about this by accessing the internet at www.theothersideofimmigration.com. It is a 55-minute documentary. Additional resources include websites. The first one, IPJC Annotated Immigration Resources. You can find that at www.ipjc.org/links/immigration.html. Continuum of Action, websites, and toolkits are available on this website. Another website is the Dream Activist. You can access this at www.dreamactivist.org. This is a migrant, youth-led social media hub for the movement to pass the Dream Act. Another website is the Immigration Policy Center. You may find that at www.immigrationpolicy.org. That website has research, reports, and analysis. Another website is Justice for Immigrants, which you may find at www.justiceforimmigrants.org. This is the Catholic Network for Immigration Reform.
Inner Community Peace and Justice Center. One God, Three Faiths, Building Community Through Prayer. Mosque and Islamic Center in Shoreline. Temple Beth Am. St. Joseph Catholic Church. In December, we completed our pilgrimage to mosque, temple, and church. Several hundred people participated in education and prayer and shared community and experiences of the sacred spaces of the Islamic, Jewish, and Christian traditions. We are grateful to our host houses of worship who partnered with IPJC. We are seeking your input to plan programs to further our interfaith relationship building. Latina Conference, a Seattle first. 300 Spanish-speaking women participate in Justicia para la Mujer, Latinas Conectadas para el Cambio. Justice Rising, a Spokane presentation with Father John Hagel, drew 80 people for a morning of prayer, presentation, and community building. Northwest Cry holds private prisons accountable. The industry leaders in private prisons, Corrections Corporation of America and GEO Group, own the largest U.S. immigration detention centers as listed on page 7. Northwest Coalition for Responsible Investment, NWCRI, members, in collaboration with Religious Investors of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, are using dialogue and shareholder resolutions to hold these corporations accountable for the treatment of detainees. Issues addressed include human rights and the use of company funds for political contributions and lobbying. IPJC seeks community hosts. This winter and spring, IPJC will travel around the Northwest to your community to listen to your hopes, tell the IPJC ministry story, seek partnerships and resources, create a community of support to promote peace and justice. Would you consider a gathering in your home? The host provides coffee and tea, a space for us to gather. IPJC provides people, 12 to 15, process, and refreshments. Call Sister Linda Haydock, SNJM, at 206-223-1138 or email ipjc@ipjc.org. Justice Movie Night, The Economics of Happiness. Join us for a social justice film. Discussion and refreshments. When? Wednesday, February 2nd, 7 to 9 p.m. Where? Assumption Church, 6201 33rd Avenue, Northeast, Seattle, Washington, 98115. Economic globalization has led to an expansion in the scale and power of big business and banking. The economics of happiness describes communities that are coming together to rebuild more human scale, ecological economies based on a new paradigm and economics of localization. Parish school workshops. Call us to schedule immigration, creating caring communities, social justice, simplicity, human trafficking, peace, just war, and nonviolence, transformation for an emerging future, conscience and clout in the marketplace, socially responsible investment, Jubilee Economics. Schools, junior high webinar on human trafficking. High school human trafficking. Teaching and a faith that does justice, K to 8 teachers. University presentations. IPJC Justice Cafes, January, Rights of Workers, February, Poverty, March, Education Access. Stations of the Cross with all of creation in English, Spanish, French. These stations provide an opportunity to reflect on Jesus' journey and the sufferings of people and earth today. Each station includes Scripture, Stories of the Cross in Creation, Reflection Questions. Cost, $2 per coffee. Discount available. Order at 206-223-1138 or www.ipjc.org. Catholic Advocacy Day 2012. Register by January 13th. Wednesday, February 15th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., Olympia, Washington. Contact IPJC, ipjc@ipjc.org, or 206-223-1138. Two chartered buses for registered participants from Seattle and Tacoma. Catholic Advocacy Day is sponsored by Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center, Washington State Catholic Conference, Catholic Community Services, Archdiocese of Seattle, Pierce County Deanery.
A Matter of Spirit is a publication of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. Sponsoring communities include the Adrian Dominican Sisters, Oregon Province Jesuits, Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary, U.S. Ontario Province, Sisters of Providence, Mother Joseph Province, Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia, Sisters of St. Joseph of Peace, and the Tacoma Dominicans. Affiliate communities include the Benedictine Sisters of Cottonwood, Idaho, Benedictine Sisters of Lacey, Benedictine Sisters of Mount Angel, Religious of the Sacred Heart, Sinsinawa Dominicans, Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet, Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon, and the Ursuline Sisters of the Roman Union. Our editorial board for this issue was Judy Demaray, S.P., Gretchen Gundrum, Ph.D., Linda Haydock, S.N.J.M., Vince Herberholt, Nick Mealy, Maria Ochoa, and Michael Ramos. Our editor is Susan Francois, CSJP, and the layout of the print edition was done by Justin Almeida. This audio version was read by Pat Daly, Lisa Dennison, Jerry Faley, Patty Lineweber, and Catherine Ransel. For more information, visit our website at www.ipjc.org.